And we're live for the construction technology news of the week with the Construction Dorks. From groundbreaking innovations to industry-shaking updates, this is your construction technology news of the week. Join us with our guest of the week as we dig into the latest news shaping the future of construction. That's right. If you feel weird, you're supposed to, because that was a dual entry that I just created. It's a mashup between the Contech crew and the Construction Dorks. If you didn't listen to our MEP recap, you need to tune back in to Tuesday's episode. But we're here today to talk about a little bit of the news. This is the cool part of the conference. This is where the Construction Dorks was founded. At the bar, afterwards, amped up, whether you were excited about what somebody said or you vehemently wanted to argue with it. And, you know, when somebody drops something big on you, like, I don't know, $500 billion into building data centers. Like, I mean, how many conversations did you have around that? We covered that on the news. If you don't know what it is, go back to last week's news. But, you know, lots of topics of conversation around the water cooler, around the watering holes and the different events at MEP Innovation. And so I thought, why not? Let's have Travis sit down with us from the Dorks and talk a little bit about it. Jonathan, you're here with us in spirit. He was busy today, so it's just us. But I'm really excited, man, to kind of sit down, talk some news, and tie it back to what we talked about at MEP Innovation.
I recently talked to some project team members at Commodore Builders. They told me about their assistant superintendent spending an entire week copying from spec books into spreadsheets while their PM would lose sleep over missing something in his contracts. Does that sound familiar? Well, then they got Document Crunch. With Document Crunch's Crunch AI, they were automatically able to create project playbooks for kickoff. They were chatting with their project documents to quickly get reliable answers to questions. That superintendent isn't spending a week in her spec book, and the PM, he has the confidence of getting it right every time. And best of all, you can now find Document Crunch within Procore, right where so many of you already work. Check out this video at documentcrunch.com/contact crew and sign up for a demo while you're there. You'll thank me for it.
So, Travis, why don't you start us off? What do you got?
Sure, sure. And I was going to comment, too. I don't know any contractors that like to argue. I haven't heard any arguments at the bar over any of these topics.
No, none of us has been asked to cool down a little bit, or is there something bad going on?
It's very... At least nobody's asked their conversation counterpart to go step outside. That hasn't happened yet.
It's very militaresque, too. It's usually an argument of, like, who has it worse.
Yeah, like the race to the bottom. Yeah. Don't you think yours is the worst? No, mine's the worst.
You think your day's bad?
I carve my pencils with a X-Acto knife and draw that way.
I've started to expand my dive. I'm going to keep using that dive word. But the construction dive usually does a pretty good job of giving us some highlights and some bullet points and news. So I went ahead and subscribed to the Facilities Dive, which is another offshoot publication of theirs. And they had a nice little, like a 3-minute read article on the new confirmed Department of Energy Secretary, Chris Wright. He's a CEO. He was with Liberty Energy. And what I wanted to bring out this is, you know, you talked about the data center work that is, you know, still on the blocks for most of our listening audience. He's going to bring, you know, the new administration has a focus on domestic energy production. And I do think that kind of continues on the theme of reshoring, of data centers, of, you know, the way the mindset around the country for the most part seems to be becoming a little bit more self-reliant. You know, we're still beating off the nightmares of COVID and some of the issues that we had, being a little bit more decentralized in some of the production of us stuff. So I do think that'll be another interesting to watch as the labor, or as the, you know, the energy sector, as that construction stuff, that parts of that grows.
Yeah, I mean, you can't look at the data center expansion. Probably everybody listening could look in their pocketbooks on their electrical bills the last couple of years. And then I'm going to be honest, look around at climate change. And so it's real. It's great to see a commitment to production, to innovation, to looking at new and alternative clean ways. And when I say clean, you know, there's so many areas for that. And it's, you know, kind of mirrors what, you know, we were talking about MP Innovation. you know, the Department of Energy is actually investing in a lot of the laboratories and things that they're looking at. Because let's be honest, I mean, every time we're building something, we got to power it, right? And, you know, if you listen to Josh Bone and a lot of the folks at NECA, he's at Electric, but at the NECA folks as well, you'll hear them harping on everything is getting more and more electrified. I mean, it is amazing the amount of electrification. So, Trent, I'm interested, you know, on your side of things from the energy production and just what you're seeing from the industry, thoughts on, you know, next couple of years ahead, what we're going to see.
Couldn't be more bullish on domestic construction for our country right now over the next 5 years. I think there's so many different avenues that are happening. And even if one or two of them doesn't go the way maybe some of the news or the hype is, there's so many more just waiting in the wake. The one that's a little wishy-washy is the data center thing. People, you know, that gets wishy-washy a little bit, but energy is not. I don't think there's any way around the fact that energy production has to increase. It has to increase more than we even can plan to increase it. So I feel like it's basically an open door to as much money as we can feasibly put at it will get done, just because even without all the data center work, we still have to have it. You know, congressionally in DC, a lot of talks on nuclear. It seems like nuclear is back, you know, back until it's not, but I think it's a good thing. We're going down that avenue again. And I don't know how many times we've talked about it, you know, Jeff and Travis, we message all the time, just so bullish on it. I'll preface that no investment advice given, but you remember when we were talking about when the DeepSeek thing came out and, you know, you look at like the big publicly traded MEP guys like Comfort Systems and EMCOR took a like 20 and 25% hit in one day, respectively. Once again, no investment advice, but I was all over that. You mean you're going to give me a discount to companies that can't even fulfill their own backlog? I mean, it's crazy. So, and then it came out that DeepSeek was likely lying about the cost to get.
No one ever lies.
No.
Exactly.
No. No. As we get taken bullish. Down.
Super bullish in it. Bullish with my own money and pocketbook even. So I just think there are big things coming.
That's huge. You hit on a couple of things there too, like nuclear at a new scale. We're seeing Google, we're seeing Microsoft kind of pledge to look into and try to build their own small nuclear reactors to power their own data centers and to push their own. Because I mean, financially, gosh, as the cost of electricity goes up, the cost of compute goes up, everything goes up. So,
interesting revenue source too. I mean, what's the you know, what happens when these companies aren't at their peak consumption? They can sell that back to the grid or back to the
grid.
So I think it's an additional revenue source for a lot of these companies. And, you know, rather than putting the burden of the bill in the traditional sense on the taxpayer or anything, I think you can look at these really wealthy tech companies can build these power plants and possibly, you know, use them for their own monetary advantage, but also can sell the energy back to, you know, back to the country, back to the people when it's not needed. So
that's interesting, because that begs into there has been some advancements in code and code writing on the AI side to lower the compute time, compute power needed, which lowers the heat with heating, you know, and which reduces the amount of need for cooling, which we have a problem with too. So lots to be done there. Travis, finish that off for us, and then I'm really interested in your next one too.
We're talking about the energy and everything, and I did kind of have a thought like, well, what happens if they do finally perfect quantum computing? But even then, the compute energy probably goes down, but those things have to be, what, near zero Kelvin? So you're spending a lot of money just keeping them cold now. So I still think there's going to be a lot of energy use even if they do crack that quantum code.
I agree. So, now, this next one's interesting, man. Talk about it a little bit, but what I want the audience to hear is what you did to do this article.
Sure. So I did go a little bit non-conventional with my next article. So next week, February 10th through the 12th, I will be in Orlando, Florida for the AHR Expo. I just kind of wanted to say to myself, and this is something I'll start doing to these events that I'm going to, I went into ChatGPT and I just started asking it questions. What are the highlights of the HR Expo? What should I be looking forward to? And I went back and forth. I did share this link out. So if Jeff puts this out with the show notes, you should have access to it. There is a session. I made sure it highlighted the session. Jeff Parks and Sean O'Hare from Smackdown will be doing a session on kind of an introduction to the sheet metal industry and in what sorts of things that, you know, SMACNA members can provide and what are the benefits of being a SMACNA member. There's some duct construction standards discussions and whatnot that they'll put in there. But the things that ChatGPT came back as highlights, focus on emphasis on decarbonization and sustainability. Easy for me to say. This is a big thing for our contractors right now. There's always changes around different refrigerants and what we have to do to manage those. Heat pumps and energy efficiency, you know, artificial intelligence and smart controls, this AI thing doesn't seem to be going away. And then they have a massive expo, a lot of vendors there to go check out in plenty of education sessions. So like I said, this was just a different way for me to kind of digest a program that I'm about to go to. And I thought it was a kind of a neat way to use it as a news article on the show of things that I'm looking for out of AHR.
Yeah, it was really cool, man. Like, it's a great way to plan. You know, as you go into these things, it's hard to know what you want. And if you know prompting, you can then really push on the prompting and ask it, you know, specific things about, you know, oh, you highlighted, you know, like we just had a deep dive on innovations in data center cooling is one of the highlights. Well, okay, dig into that. Where and when are the sessions? You know, get prepped ahead of time, because part of this too is like, you go and you're like, oh, I didn't even know that was happening. So right. This is a cool, like, get prepped. And it's also a wake up to anybody planning these events to make sure your websites and your programs, et cetera, are out there and consumable, because people are going to start to do this kind of stuff. So we will share that. Trent, I'm interested, man. Like, which part gets you? Is it the fact that Travis is so busy now he's using ChatGPT to plan where he's going? Or, you know, the some of the things about the show. What do you got?
I'm so disappointed in you, Travis. I don't even know what to know. no, it's cool. You know, look, this seems like a really good use case for what AI is today. And why not? You know, I think so many times the focus is, can it give me an answer to my questions? Where now you're kind of looking at it as in the realm of, can it help me generate the questions I need to have for the real people when I get to, you know? So that's kind of an interesting spin on it, because I still think people have the best answers. But yeah, it's an interesting use case to maybe get those right and left boundaries for you to go into something new and help you come out of it with the best answers to the best questions possible. Yeah.
We were talking about MEP innovation and the news. We didn't highlight it on the recap show, but our buddy Jake Olson had a unique presentation and kickoff to day two right before my session. So it was nice that he warmed the crowd up. Normally you got to get a crowd warmed up. And well, Jake, you know, Jake Olson's really good at that. And we announced, thanks to the team at Stratus, the $32 million investment on last week's show or a couple weeks ago show. But Jake was up there to talk a little bit, Trent, about what might be coming from that $32 million. So talk a little bit about what Stratus was highlighting there.
Really appreciate you getting that out there. A couple weeks ago was big news, you know, posting about our Series B fundraise. A lot of hard work went into that moment, and the team's really excited. There's a lot of hard work left to do now, you know, different pressures, but it's kind of one of those situations where some of the roadblocks and some of the excuses no longer apply. So, you know, the company can now get to a point of better innovation, bringing those useful and rich features back to the clients that are trusting us with their money and for their productivity. So we're really excited about it. Look for resource expansion, personnel increases, things like that, but also really getting back to the innovative feature enhancement that was the core of Stratus for so long. You know, bringing those new ideas and those new workflow solutions to the clients that partnered with us very early through the grace of what we've done and through them. Most of them still with us and still innovating alongside of us. And, you know, it's been a really good push, and this is only going to allow it to go higher. And one of the ones that's finishing up now it's a beta that's out, and we're calling it Big Data is the name of it. And it's just a more streamlined way of accessing all these millions and millions of lines of data that our customers over the past 6-7 years have brought into Stratus, and data that's even been generated inside of Stratus. We're now spinning up a separate Azure SQL database for each of these customers that they can pick and choose the data points they want. And we're replicating that in its own SQL that you can query and use. Gets rid of some of the complexities of the massive database that we have inside of Mongo for the rest of the data and for every customer. So it's really going to let them direct query things into BI, merge data from other data sources. A lot of those things are really going to open up now. And it's pretty cool. We just no better way than to kick off all these years of success with the ability to do that because of all the data that we just have in our platform now. I mean, you know, we're talking about what does an assembly look like to a contractor A or B or this. And, you know, we had a discussion the other day where we were just like, if anything needed to be trained on how to assemble or how to, I don't think anyone out there has more assembly data than Stratus does. I challenge, you know, we've got millions of them. So it's pretty cool. It starts to get a little more eye-opening, you know, look for big things to happen over the coming years and a really big inflection point for us.
You know, that's the, and it is, it's a huge inflection point. It's something that, you know, we've got a lot of technology companies that go through this process, right? You go early money, innovative, you're jumping up the stairs quick and you're running up the stairs. And then all of a sudden you got to turn around and build a company. That starts to burn down and you start to have to solidify things and then it's time to grow again. And that's what these series are all about. So I love that though. I'll be honest, you know, everybody thinks that, you know, with the funding round that was hard. It's like, nah, the hard work's a coming, but it's the fun part too. Like,
I don't want to downplay what everybody's done, but the hard work doesn't stop. That's for sure.
It's all hard work. If it wasn't, we wouldn't be talking about it on a news section, right? Travis, what are your thoughts, man?
I was going to, you know, highlight the tie back to some of the last, the recap episode where we're talking about being data driven, like, and this is just another example of the tools that we use to get work done, right, is now going to start to produce and provide some insights into how we're doing that work. And I think that as these roles and positions and companies in our industry continue to evolve, the products are going to evolve along with them to provide that. Those data-driven decisions, right? Jeff, is that yours or is it data-informed?
Jeff doesn't data like informed. Driven. He doesn't like
driven. Informed, baby. Data-informed. The data does not know where I want to go, but it can certainly give me insights into how I can get there or maybe open up what I might want to do and inform me or enhance me. I've been challenged that it should be data-enhanced. And I'm like, you know what? Or empowered. I'll take any of that other than the machine making the decision for me.
All you really need to know is it's not this anymore.
Yeah. It's not a wag.
Right.
I feel those are my favorite. I feel like, right. And I'm like, I'm usually wrong when I feel that way. So let's just look
gut
at the data.
Feeling will always have a place in everything, but I still think you have to, you know, use what you've learned, use what you've done.
Well, it can guide gut instinct, right? Like if your gut instinct is something and then you can get some data and gather it around it.
Yeah.
It's about getting as many data points as you can and then overlaying it with the human. That's why I'm always like AI, et cetera. It's not going to replace the human. It's going to augment because you can never know what we want to do. Right. I got to say that on stage again. I'll say it as many times as I can. The self-driving car will drive itself, but it will never tell me where I want to go. Because it just doesn't know what I want to do right now.
It won't replace the human. It'll just eliminate it. No, I'm just kidding.
If you want to hear that from Trent, you can go over to the Construction Dorks. We allow that over. All right. We didn't talk enough AI. So I'm going to bring it. And this came to me last night from Tanis Laviniak, who, as you know, is one of the co-hosts here on the show. I'm not going to tell you what was in the text other than this link that said on TechCrunch, so this came from TechCrunch, Google removes pledge to not use AI for weapons from the website. That brings up a lot of my previous statement. See Trent's previous statement. But it actually, it's reorganizing where it's putting things and how it's articulating it. And it's going more on about responsible AI, aligning with companies, governments, and organization and sharing values to create an AI that protects people, promotes global growth, and supports national security. A lot of words, mitigate unintended or harmful outcomes and avoid unfair bias. There's a lot of nuance in this and them removing it and rephrasing it. Words are important. So them removing it is worth the attention. But I jokingly said back, you know, surveillers will surveil the people surveilling us. So we don't know who's looking. And maybe that plays into a role of, hey, Google's actually going to build its own tools to make sure and protect us from surveillance that goes past what it should be. Because currently, there's a lot of nation states out there doing a lot of scary things. And I also think this allows them to participate maybe with the government in certain ways. And so there's nuance here. And I couldn't think of two better people to drop that can of worms and say, go.
Boy, you've got the two, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Travis,
where's my tinfoil hat?
I want to start with you as you put on your tinfoil hat. What's what brainwaves are you trying to protect here?
The first thing that came to my mind is that I chuckled when they removed the do no evil from their company charter as well. Weapons don't mean only offensive, right? A weapon is a defensive weapon as well. There's always arguments how defense turns to offense, but let's just put it in that mindset. And that was kind of, I think, where you were leading to, Jeff, is this does, you know, open in words are important in legal matters. So if they do start getting involved in defensive, you know, weaponry and infrastructure, the world, you know, maybe they can't come back on legally or whatever, however they're doing this, especially for probably for their shareholders. So that's where my mind kind of went with that, is let's give them the benefit of the doubt for now that it's more of a defensive, because you're right, there's the world is full of bad actors, whether they're state sponsored or not. And we're in the, you know, we're in the type of environment that we have to defend ourselves against that.
What was the full context around the word weapon? Can you repeat that for me?
So that's the interesting part about how you define it. So they removed their statement that pledges to not use AI for weapons from the website. So Google removed a pledge to not build AI for weapons or surveillance from its website. They've changed it now. Its applications will not pursue certain things. They'll be responsible AI. We believe that companies, governments, and organizations sharing these values should work together to create AI that protects people, promotes global growth, and supports national security.
Yeah.
So
this seems like a legal play to me. I think they've probably got a legal team that, I mean, you could argue that slander could be a weapon against monetization, or, I mean, I don't know where it would end, but this seems like a probably legal advice on their end would be one guess. Probably have a legal team that says, hey, as we advance this stuff, we don't really know how all of our clients are going to use this product. And if they do use it to develop something that divests somebody of this, that could be considered a weapon by definition. So there could be a lot of legal speak in there. The slightly more tinfoily response could be that they've been approached for a government contract on something and the board of directors wants that revenue, and this is step one to allow them to pursue that. So those are probably two of my best guesses without
the answer is probably a little column A, little
column B. To the construction dorks, if I know Jeff will get angry if I go too tinfoil on this, but the logical part of me thinks one of those two is probably a decent avenue of what's really happening there.
I won't get mad. I'll just say you gave it all away. Make them go over to the dorks and listen to us over there.
Tune
maybe
in
we'll
the
have a
want to hear more.
Yeah, I go over there. We'll hear more. We'll have like a deep dive.
Deep dive.
Cuts into my soul every time.
I know. I do it just to make Trent cringe. I'm going to segue us because that brought me to an article released by a recent guest on the show, Usman Shuja, at Fast Company, talking about, can we prevent AI from repeating social media's big mistakes? And I think this is a powerful one, and I've had some pretty heated conversations, and I get pretty worked up over this one on a consistent basis because I think we have to learn from what happened in social media. We really let the tech giants govern themselves, and they prove that, unfortunately, they're not going to do that. And they're not going to regulate themselves, and they're not going to protect the people out there. It's up to the people to protect the people. And so this really talks about the emphasis in learning from that unregulated social media growth in this new era, because this new era, especially right now, what I focus on is the misinformation and the bias in algorithms that can be created. Since people have a tendency to trust so much, especially look at the amount of false information and the number of, you know, I'm going to say it, anti-science, anti-climate change, flat earthers, et cetera, that exist because of the massive amounts of data that are false on the internet. And now building this into machines that can produce human-like responses to things can really create some dangerous situations for people, and for especially for young people. But it also can concentrate power. Like, listen, it takes a lot to build a lot of this. Like we just saw, Trent, we discussed this earlier, that who was it? Deep state.
I mean,
was that Freudian or
what's come out? There it is.
That, you know, they kind of lied about how much money it takes. It takes a lot of money to build these. And in fact, we've seen early players disappear because of that. And that could create a concentration of power in the wrong area. There's ethical dilemmas. There's bias in all code. That's not to single out AI as some uniquely biased thing. There's bias in all code. And the idea behind it is to understand that and work its way out of it. I actually think AI, done correctly, has a chance to do that at a level we've never seen. I think it has a chance to defeat the misinformation if used correctly. But I think we got to come together and like have some, put on the big pants and, you know, our suits and our ties maybe, and maybe take the ties off. But
yeah,
I'm not a big tie guy. But and have the harder conversations around this. So I thought it'd be fun to follow that up. I also love that Usman is now in our in the construction tech world. He came from outside of it, and to see him run Bluebeam now, he's the CEO of Bluebeam, a Nemetschek company. He actually just stepped up onto the board of Nemetschek as well. I just saw that announcement recently. So take a look, just to have somebody in our world that can get out in a fast company and have these global conversations. It's really interesting. So I'm interested, Travis, on your sort of take on this one. We've talked a bit about it.
The hard part for me that I want to make sure we don't lose the free speech aspect. I agree with you that there is a lot of bad actors that can do a lot of bad things. And by the way, the Earth's not flat. I mean, really? With real regulation, anything like this, it is a balancing act, right? Because you don't always want the complete and total free for all, but you don't want to suppress voices or innovations or anything like that that would come out of any of these platforms. So it is important to kind of look, you know, the good and the bad out of it. And you kind of have to then right size your regulations and your approach to regulations. AI, I think, has a part in that because it is just a tool and it just kind of does what you tell it. So if you feed it a lot of bad stuff, it's going to report back bad stuff.
Yes.
So I'm very careful about it, but I'm also not just, you know, Wild West, do whatever. So I like that they're thinking about it anyway.
Yeah, Trent, I'm interested in you, and I will go back to that libertarian piece there, Travis.
People have got to take ownership of this a little bit. Remember that you have to seek the middle and understand that this AI, these algorithms are only perpetuating our behavior. They're accelerating it, but keep in mind that it's accelerating the way we've behaved before these came around. So people have really got to own this on themselves a little bit more. I mean, way before these social media algorithms existed, we've had a very polarized public that would be, well, I only watch CNN or I only watch Fox News, or this divide has been there. And it's because people find themselves drawn to the extremes and they don't seek the middle. And then when these algorithms come around, their behavior is only training these things to just perpetuate what they've already done. So has the tech accelerated it? Absolutely. Did it actually create this human behavior? No.
I mean, so we need a little ownership here. I think people need to understand that they kind of did this to themselves. Maybe there's been some gasoline thrown on the fire that was already there. But yeah, I have a hard time blaming the tech companies fully for what's happening here.
Well, I will say read Aristotle, but also read The Anxious Generation, because there is a correlation between The Anxious Generation, the rise in anxiety statistically across the world at the incorporation and creation of social media. It was an accelerant, but not an accelerant. It was a tool that was weaponized in a way against younger ones. So Travis, to go back to the libertarian piece, right? I'm very libertarian myself, and it's about hurting people in public versus doing things to yourself in private and understanding the balance between those two. To me, this is where this sits in that line. We have to protect the youth. We have to protect misinformation. And you know, Trent, we can't fix seek the middle. I wish we could. I hope we can. And I hope the algorithms can actually start to bring that by posing in other alternative ideas, or at least.
Well, they can't be ad-based. Ad-based is going to.
No,
it's gonna double
down. I meant they got to add. No, they can add in, you know, as you're researching and asking it questions, can it be producing information?
I can't sell you a winter coat if you live in Texas, right?
Right. So. But it can tell you these, it can bring these ideas. It can bring us more towards the middle, but it's got to be regulated and we got to protect certain groups. And to me, that's the important part. But I also see this, like, unfortunate in our world, kick the can down the road. And we did that with social media. And now we have this anxious generation. And what will the next one look like? I don't know. But I certainly, if we don't learn from that, then we're insane. And that's the definition, right? So we're going to give you more to think about. Maybe we'll even do an episode over on the dorks and connect.
It sounds like a fun one.
I feel like we add Jonathan to this one. It's going to get real nerdy. To our missed friend, Jonathan, we miss you, buddy. I hope we represented you. You're probably yelling at the screen right now of your car. So drive safe.
Separate noises.
Down the road and yell at us. Trent, Travis, thanks for sitting down. And it was awesome seeing you guys last week. And just love to be a part of the dorks and love to have the dorks over on the crew. Maybe we'll keep doing this a little more often.
No, crisscross. Thanks a lot. Hello to all the crew listeners out there. Come check us out, constructiondorks.com. Yeah, it's been fun.
That's right. He's even starting to plug. So thank you for tuning in today to geek out for the construction technology news of the week with the Construction Dorks. To read all our news stories, learn about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.